What we're dealing with here, littering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Called the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah. No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the Police Academy podcast. This episode is in audio only, so if you're looking for the video, it ain't there. We had some serious technical issues on the video side during recording for this one, so I apologize for that. It is audio only. Granted, 98%+ of our audience is all on audio anyway, so shouldn't affect most of you, but there's that. This is an interview episode with Jason Evans of Not Laboratory. I'll introduce him in a second. First, our t-shirts are now open for pre-order, so go to our website, policeacademypodcast.com/GSF. Good Strong Free is the brand, kind of a spinoff brand from the show that all of our merch is under. So policeacademypodcast.com/GSF. You can find, we have five different shirts available right now. They are on their way. So we've opened up pre-orders just so people can reserve their size and style if they wish, because they are likely to run out in short order. So go check that out. Of course, we have military discount, police discount, and discount for members over at Patreon as well. Our Tumblr 2.0 is also out. That is for our top tier members only. And if you have the old Tumblr, you want a replacement, please let me know. Just shoot me an email or hit me up on Discord and I will get that. I'll give you the details as to how you can order a new one there. All right, so to our guest. Today, we're speaking with Jason Evans of Not Laboratory. He served as a police officer. First, spent 10 years in the Navy working on as an electrician on submarines. And then he spent, I believe he said 7 years with the Grand Junction Police Department in Colorado. There, he spent time, of course, as a patrol officer, school resource officer, community resource officer, and firearms instructor for that department. He holds a nuclear engineering degree and a master's of business administration with an emphasis on data analytics. Lots of big words there. In other words, he's kind of smart. Jason is currently a project engineer at Not Laboratory. Not Lab is a forensic engineering and animation firm, and they have recently created digital media forensics, which is a new division intended to assist law enforcement with in-depth analysis of digital evidence. Okay, so what do these guys do? They recreate crime scenes in 3D. They can discover facts using especially video evidence in cases using data and science, essentially engineering, to eliminate issues in that case, to create transparency and help clearly present the case to a jury. All right. So they use body-worn cameras, surveillance cameras, of course, dash cams, cell phones, Ring doorbells, anything that they can get video of that scene or that incident from, they can use to recreate the scene in a 3D way and create what they call a, let me get this right, a point cloud that allows them to essentially use engineering to provide solid, objective, scientific answers to questions revolving around the case, essentially. So that's what they do. I'm going to let Jason explain the rest. The audio quality, the audio quality turned out okay on this one. It was the video quality. I stand corrected. The video quality was non-existent at times, and the audio with the video was even worse. So we're going audio only on this one. But I hope you all enjoy the show. We will see you on the flip side. Well, Jason, thanks again for coming on the show. We appreciate you having taking the time to come do this. And I'm excited to jump into talking about this topic because obviously it's a huge point of contention these days, and there's a lot of misunderstanding around the value of video evidence and what it is and what it isn't. But before we get to that, I always like to give my guests a chance to kind of introduce themselves. So if you could just kind of share your career path and what led you to working with Knot Labs.
Yeah. In California, joined the Navy back at the board for as an electrician, and then I worked at the shipyard as nuclear engineering technologies when I was in the military. When I got out in 2014, I wanted to continue to serve and wanted to be back to Colorado, so I was lucky enough to get hired by Grand Junction Police Department and worked there for 7 years. While I was there, I was a firearms instructor, of course, patrol officer for many years. I was also a school resource officer, part of the CIT team, the critical incident team. Did some time with our special unit that dealt with mental health, and was involved in one directly on the call. And then I was also part of a peer support team that supported our officers in shooting. So that was an amazing opportunity for me. And then after last year and just seeing so much going on, I had the opportunity where my boss at Knot Laboratory brought up this idea of using engineering with body cams and implying the engineering technologies we use in forensic engineering in law enforcement. And so we sat down and had some serious conversations, and I decided that this is something we needed to bring to law enforcement's attention as just the capabilities of engineering and those engineering practices, and started with Knot Laboratory in January. So that's where I've been. And started from the beginning and naming what we call digital media forensics, which is essentially a service that we provide at Knot Laboratory and just its applications within law enforcement. We've been working on it all summer and real hard and hitting it hard. We went to National Sheriff's Association Conference. We went to the FBI National Academy Association Conference just recently in July, and we're going to IACP. I have trouble saying that one. in New Orleans in September. So.
Okay. So. It seems it's obvious that the tech in relation to, you know, law enforcement, criminal investigations, especially law enforcement evidence, because, you know, everyone's wearing not everyone, but more and more so officers are wearing body cams, cruisers have cruiser cams. It seems that this is going to be the way that it goes, right? We have to be able to better process all of this data and figure out what really happened. So and I've seen some of the presentations that you guys have put together, and, you know, it's something that you obviously can't do just by taking different videos, and you can't just stick them together and make it work, right? It takes some serious back-end engineering work. So can you kind of like talk about how that happens, how you guys actually kind of work that magic, pulling all these different sources together?
Well, and you hit the nail on the head on that one. Body cams are an amazing tool. Dash cams are an amazing tool. Surveillance cameras are an amazing tool. But just like anything on a duty belt, it's a tool, it's part and parcel, and it has its limitations. It takes a three-dimensional object and viewpoint that we see as officers, or as officers see now, and puts it in a single plane. And what we are able to do is we're able to utilize things like Ferro scanners or Leica scanners that are a laser scanner that a lot of law enforcement are starting to use, but have been used in engineering for decades now. And those generate what they call a point cloud. And it's a really fancy computer program that just 3D maps any location. And then you can actually take that video and place that in that point cloud. And from that, you can extrapolate speed, distances, locations, timing, to the microsecond, essentially. And that has a benefit because a lot of times I see with a lot of body cams, a lot of the things like depth perception and all those things and perception, time perception, and all those human aspects are taken away from it. And we are able to extrapolate a lot of information and provide these district attorneys, POA type attorneys. And so they have that information to address any issues, any of those things like that may come arise when a shooting involves, an officer.
Right. So once you go to that scene and use the laser scanner and you've got your point cloud, then, and just correct me if I'm wrong here, this is my understanding of it, then you can take all of the other video evidence from the actual incident, right? The body worn cameras, traffic cameras, whatever evidence, video evidence you have, and you can reference those points and say, okay, well, the front driver's side tire was at reference point, whatever, right? Reference point A at this point, moment in time. And then it was at this moment in time, at reference point C. And therefore you can figure out how fast it was moving. Cause it, right. Like it took this amount of time to travel this far. Is that essentially kind of how it works?
Yeah. And the big crux of that is that point cloud, because right. it provides such an accurate measurement that you're able to take those images, whether they're still photographs, video of any quality, and identify those fixed objects and use those as points of reference, and then essentially figure out where the moving objects are. And what's amazing is with body cams, because it's attached to a moving object, the officer took, and then also vice versa, if the suspect's moving, you could actually track the suspect and show his path. The way the vehicle's moving, if you have enough fixed objects to locate that, like you said, the velocities of any vehicles, and also anybody that maybe doesn't have their body cam on. We've seen that in some other incidents, because just like any officer knows, you think you turn it on, or you thought it did, it had some sort of issue. It's, you know, there's this infallibility associated with body cams, because it's not like a perfect automated system. We're able to actually identify officers that maybe had some sort of issue, whether it was activating, or, you know, you're dealing with a threat, and therefore you're not going to worry about your body cam. You're going to deal with the threat first, and then deal with the body cam. We're able to actually locate that officer and show his movements as well. So once you've fixated that camera within that point cloud, you just build all this information, and just essentially it's a treasure trove. It's amazing just how many bits and pieces of information that you can build from that, and show those things, and gain all that information from that video if it's processed correctly.
Right. So this is a lot of very meticulous, very exact information, right? This is science. This is engineering. And I say this very facetiously, but why do we need all that when we can just watch the video and see what happened for ourselves, right? Like, because that's the perception that so many people have. They watch the video and go, well, I don't need you to tell me what happened. I saw the video.
So the issue you run into videos is not only the person, the video is an inanimate object. The person who's watching the video is not. So in today's day and age, whether you're a cop, you're a politician, you're whoever it is, you're taking in those human aspects, and you're looking at this video as that individual perceiving that video, and vice versa. A lot of the people that are making these decisions on the back end of these incidents are not cops. They're not experts in the field of human, you know, interactions, like a force science type of, you know, entity or experts in those regards. So this information, you know, is here to support, you know, those people that are, you know, talking about those things, about decision time, you know, time reference speeds, you know, making those decisions on whether to shoot or not to shoot, you know, where that suspect was in correlation to. So really what we're looking at doing is identifying that evidence to support the incident that's going on. We're not looking at necessarily, you know, and vice versa, if there is some sort of divergence between perception and what you're able to find in that video, you know, is addressing those things and the human aspects of those interactions. Mm-hmm. And so the video is great. I mean, I think every officer goes and looks at those as learning experiences, but we all come in those with those preconceptions of, you know, how can we use this to be better? You know, what went right, what went wrong, and vice versa. Everybody in the public's doing that same thing as well. You know, they just see that video. And so this removes that human aspect of it, and we apply just science and engineering to it, and just pull that data, and then provide it to the departments, the district attorney, you know, lawyers, whoever it is, so that they can then address those issues. So then it's not opinions. There's nothing opinionated about it. Science.
Right. You know, obviously I was kind of leading you on that question, but you hit it right on the head. Basically what I expected you to say, and that's essentially, you know, as you said, the video is an inanimate object. And a lot of people go, well, the video can't lie. Right. But they ignore the fact that they, as the viewer, are not objective, right? The viewer is extremely subjective, and therefore the public response, being based solely on viewership is an extremely subjective response that that involves perspective, right? And this whole idea that perspective is truth, which is just one of the biggest lies of our time, comes into play at that point, because now the viewer's perspective is influencing how they're seeing this video. I remember, I can't remember the guy's name. It was a black gentleman that was shot and killed in Charlotte. And, it was actually a black officer that shot him. And after the incident, something fell on the ground from one of these officers, and near where the guy was shot. Right. And so in the video, it was a litmus test, right? These people who wanted to believe the cops wrongfully shot this guy said that thing, that black object that fell after this guy was shot, was a gun. The cop just planted a gun, and there was a gun that was found next to the gentleman that was shot. But the people who wanted to believe that the cops were justified were like, no, that's a latex glove, you know, because these cops are, second something like that happens, you're throwing on these gloves because you're going to try to render aid, and you don't want to get whatever diseases that person potentially has. So very reasonable explanation. But it's also reasonable if you believe cops are bad and up to no good, then it's reasonable to you to think that was a gun, right? So it was a great example of, and we see this all the time, of these videos where everyone watches the same exact thing and comes to completely opposite conclusions. And so I love to see companies like what you guys, companies like Knot Labs doing what you do, because we really need someone to meticulously sift through this and use the tech that you have to give actual real answers, to give, you know, quantifiable truth. This is exactly what happened. You know, the science says this is what happened. You may have thought that was something else, but this is what it is. So taking that, right, this is obviously, what you guys are doing is obviously important and needed in response to these incidents. But so how can agencies respond to these incidents better? For example, how long, if something like this happens and they know right away, like, hey, we need to get this video evidence analyzed so we know what happened, we can get something out to the public. How long does it take you guys, once you have all the video, to at least get enough put together to go to give the department something to put out there?
So the first thing I've been realizing just talking at these conferences is the number one thing that all departments should get their hands on, whether they borrow it, use it, buy it, however, is a laser scanner. So they're out there, the engineering industry has used them for decades. They're moving into law enforcement, like Leica and Faro, kind of the leaders in those industry. Scan your scene, because that's the first thing that's going to save every law enforcement agency some time, stress, and all this other stuff. And we have our own, we provide the service, we'll fly out, drive out, whatever we need to do to scan that scene. But most state level agencies have the resources where they have one of these, or there's larger departments in an area. So that's my first recommendation, because that's going to massively cut down our time frame. Because if we have usable point cloud data, that's going to drop that timeline. Once we get all the video and everything, depending on the amount, number of videos, if we have one video and that is a solo officer involved shooting, we're probably looking at 1 to 2 weeks, depending on the length of the incident, right? If we're looking, because what the hardest part right now is there's no software out there. There's an engineer and a visualization expert that are combining to align all this to build this point cloud and build this independent three-dimensional scene and reconstruction. And so, but as you start adding videos, you got to align all those stuff. You got to check it, make sure it's valid, make sure there's no issues, that it meets these engineering standards. And so as you add those, you probably can add a week onto those things as you kind of exponentially go up. Now, if the video, like I said, if it's a 20-second video, short shoot, you know, short interaction of video because it happened quickly, then less time. But we can also concentrate on the pertinent aspects of it right off the bat. And that's one of the things we have at Knot Laboratory. We're a smaller company. if you have a digital media forensic type incident, you call me directly as an engineer. I'm the guy right now as the engineer, and we have a marketing team as well that kind of helps out just to balance that stuff out. But we're going to talk, we're going to dialogue. I'm going to find out what you need to address your issue, what concerns you have, and what you want to try to answer. And we are going to work together and get that done. And we can speed it up as well, depending on the need and the requirements based on each state. Like Colorado, we just passed a bunch of legislation that you have to get that stuff out within 14 days. So if the department's trying to get ahead of that, we're going to partner with them. We'll work overtime, we'll work whatever we need to do to make sure we can get that done and make it, you know, as efficient as possible for that department. So it is time intensive, but it all depends on the data in to get the final product.
Right. So what would you say the percentage is of departments now that have these scanners already? Just ballpark.
The scary part that I'm realizing, and as I do, United States are 25 officers or less. And so there's probably maybe 2 to 5% that have these scanners. But the thing is that they can be utilized in not just officer-involved shootings or critical incidents, but in every aspect. The technology is advanced so far that they have handheld versions of this. So really one of the things I want to do and what we're working towards is creating a training program for law enforcement agencies, because this is only a product that's been launched for 6 months now. Mm-hmm. We haven't got to the training aspect yet, but if like a department really calls me up and we want to do it, we want to make it happen, I'll do it. We'll talk about it from an engineering standpoint and my prior law enforcement experience is those scanners, they're a big initial investment, but once you get into utilizing them, they can save officers mass amount of time on, you know, accident reconstruction, you know, a burglary scene and all this other stuff, because you're not having to sketch anything out. You don't need to do crime scene photos. You can literally just scan the scene, snap a handful of photos, and then you can plant those in those scene, and now you have an entire crime scene, and it could take you less than 5 minutes. So there is this efficiency because this technology is not being used yet, that once you know how it can implement it, it can save the department as a whole quite a bit of time on processing that information. It's just that initial investment and budgeting that stuff out and working through those. And we have partnerships with Faro and also LECA that if the department really wants to call me up, I can put you in contact with somebody to talk about that stuff.
Okay. And it seems like something that obviously as the technology becomes more available, it's going to get cheaper, but that agencies, if they become aware of this technology and how important it can be, just kind of have a game plan. I mean, a policy in place that like, hey, if we have an incident that fits this criteria, then we're going to reach out to this larger agency, you know, in the county next door or whatever it is. And, you know, we have an agreement with them that they're going to bring their scanner for an incident like this. You know, that's common in law enforcement. We kind of share resources. So my next question was going to be, how do agencies begin working with you guys? It sounds like it's just, hey, a phone call, like this happened, we need some help here. Is that basically it?
Yeah. So we're a smaller company. We have less than 50 employees and this department's pretty small. It's literally about four of us right now. You either email me, you phone call me. I have my work cell on me all the time, and we'll do initial assessment, figure out what you got. And then what we do is every sort of case that we have a couple other prior law enforcement officers on staff that work on our accident reconstruction team. We tabletop it. We also bring in a mechanical engineer. And if we have a civil engineer available, just to think outside the box of, is there something that we're not thinking about that could benefit the department in an investigation? And we do that for free. We just do that as a customer service concept and everything. And then we get back to you. Hey, this is what we're thinking. These are some options. Hey, do you have this available? If not, maybe here's some ideas to try to get that. You know what I mean? Because if you're a smaller agency that lives in super rural, maybe you didn't think about calling, you know, it happened a week ago and you can still go and scan that a week later and we can help you out. So we're really just trying to give that engineering thought process to that department. And we do that for free. At that point, we'll like talk about, hey, we want to do this. It'll cost us much money. And again, that's just something we're going to talk about. And our advice is free. Our dialogue is free. Just reach out to us. We'll engage you. And even if you don't come back and pay us any money, we want law enforcement agencies as a whole to know that this technology is out there and how to use it to best benefit themselves. You know what I mean? And at some point, maybe you'll need our assistance in some form or fashion, and we want to build that relationship.
Right. What's the one point of contact that would be best for them to reach out to? I'll put it in the show notes for you.
My email address is jevans, spelled E-V-A-N-S, at knotlab.com, and it's spelled knotlab.com.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes so they have it.
Yeah, and I'll send you my work cell phone as well, so you can just put it up in the narrative as well.
Okay. So are there any big cases that, you know, have garnered a lot of attention in the past that come to mind that you wish that Knot Labs could have gotten a hold of? Cases that you know that with your capabilities, the outcome could have been much different, or at least the evidence could have been processed in a way that made a lot more sense. I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot on that, but I'm just curious.
Most recently that just, the biggest one just recently that we really, like, us as an engineering talked about that we can make a difference was that shooting that happened in Chicago where the 14-year-old boy, had the handgun and then was shot when he was reaching around, type of thing. And what was really stood out to us was not so much the incident, but there was multiple camera views of that incident. Mm-hmm. And that one, you know, of course, just like anything right now, is being that video evidence is thrown into the media and it's essentially out there for anybody to take their opinion on. And we really looked at that as we could really dissect that down and show distances where the officers were located, where the subject, you know, how fast it was actually moving, because we had concerns that there are videos out there that have been slowed down that we had ran across just on public consumption. You know, we didn't ever get any of the evidence from Chicago PD and everything. We were just looking on the internet, you know, those other YouTube channels that had it there. And we ran across a couple that we just quickly threw into our systems and they had been slowed down for whatever reason, you know, and so removing that aspect. So we, you know, that one, I think we could have really helped it out. Hopefully that one's being resolved and everything. I haven't seen it in the news lately, but that one really stood out to me as being something that we could actively, you know, engage and help out on and address, you know, some of those issues that people had questions about. Because not only do cops have questions, but the public has those questions. And, yeah. You know, and like I said, it's a science. It's the evidence that's out there. It's an inanimate object. Time is time. Distance is distance. It is what it is. And, you know, if you get those answers, there's not everybody asking these questions about those things, and it removes it away from that. So that's the case that just recently stood out to me that really kind of sparked my interest. Plus, there was another one in North Carolina where they were trying to do a drug stop where they jumped out of the truck and then surrounded. There was a couple different body cam footages. That one stood out to me because there's a lot of angles of what you can see, what was a lot of moving pieces. There's a vehicle moving in it, and, you know, those two cases just recently stood out to me that I think we could have definitely assisted the law enforcement agency maybe in just answering some questions and then maybe helping them, you know, address those issues and give that information to the public to be as transparent as possible.
Gotcha. So thanks again for taking the time to kind of explain how this all works. It's very interesting to me. And I'm sure plenty of our listeners are wondering right now if they're cops, does my agency have this capability? And so to give you one last plug, but also kind of give a little bit of guidance there to our LEOs listening, what's the best thing that they can do? What advice do you have for them as far as like researching whether or not their department's ready for this and how to go about helping their department get there?
So the biggest thing is body cams are coming nationwide, whether we like it or not. And my biggest advice is, you know, as a department, is to start thinking ahead right now on how to address these stuff from a technology standpoint. And from this, laser scanners are great, but if you call me up and everything, or we talk about it, I could do another podcast, is we can teach departments on how to make a point cloud with just a digital camera. You just take 1,000 pictures of the scene and you can splice them together and you can generate a point cloud. You don't need a $40,000 drone To be able to do a lot of drone work when it comes to scene processing, you actually only probably need an $1,800 drone to do the exact same thing as some of these higher end ones. It's just understanding what you're trying to generate before you go out and buy that stuff. And so that's one of the things we want to do from a training standpoint is, reconstruction on a budget and try to teach these agencies on how to do that, what programs you use and do those things, because we understand that every department money is an issue. I don't care if you're LAPD, NYPD, or you're Mesa County, Colorado, it's money is a concern for every department, and this technology is needed, and how do we get it in the hands of officers and departments? And that's our ultimate goal. So the biggest thing is pick up the phone, call, ask. I've got free permission from my bosses to spend as much time to make sure we get the right information, and vice versa. If there's a question about it, then do it. The other thing is crime scene processing is probably the most important thing, because crime scenes are going to go away. Whether it's just a basic traffic accident that turns into civil litigation down the road, or a homicide or an officer involved shooting, you can never go out and take too many pictures, take too many videos. I mean, everybody has a cell phone right now and they take amazing things. Just use the tools in your belt and do them. I mean, it's just going to support the good cop work that every cop is out there doing right now and support what they're doing. And that stuff right there on the back end is the most useful thing when it comes through us as forensic engineers and doing our digital evidence stuff. Go out there and build a network in your community of everybody's got a doorbell ring, everybody's got surround cameras, not just dopers now. And so know who those people are, do a neighborhood canvas. Technology is great, but again, it's a tool. Good cop work, like a good neighborhood canvas to identify things and everything, is the most important thing, and then go from there. So I guess the biggest thing is, don't just because technology's here and it's getting shoved in our laps in an accelerated rate, is don't move away from that good cop work. It still has benefit. Mm-hmm. Of what cops have been doing for the last 100 years, and then just put the technology on top of it.
Right. That's what I was just going to say. It's just another layer. It's just more evidence that you can collect. It used to be pocket litter, now it's a freaking video from a doorbell. It's the same thing. So awesome. Yeah, man. Thanks again for coming on this, super helpful info and really cool area that you guys are working in. So it's definitely, needed. And it's obvious that we're headed this direction. So you guys are definitely on the leading edge of it. We'll get your phone number real quick and I'll throw it in the show notes for everyone. Anyone listening, if you want to reach out to these guys, you got the email, I'll get you their phone number and they'll get you started in the right direction. So thanks again, Jason. Appreciate it. All right, that's a wrap for this one, ladies and gents. Thanks again for tuning in. If you want to get hold of Jason or Knott Labs, the links are in the show notes. His email is in there, his phone number, of course, the website. And then I've also put links in there that they sent me that sends you directly to some of the videos of their recreations, which I've already watched even prior to this show. And they're really cool. So it's interesting to see how these data clouds essentially, or point clouds, can recreate these scenes in a way that the individual components of the evidence couldn't do by themselves. So go check that out. And then, of course, don't forget to go check out our merch over at policeacademypodcast.com/GSF, which stands for Good, Strong, Free. That is the new merch brand from the show. And members, police, and military all get discounts over there. So go check that out. If you are police or military, and you want to get your discount, just email me and I'll give you a code. You just obviously have to prove that you're active law enforcement or retired, same for military, and I'll get you a code and that will give you your discount. So that's it. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you on the next one. As always, do good, be strong, stay free.